You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
Oh, it's gorgeous. Listen to the text. Cobbler Jack Black grinds his night teeth, climbs into his religious trousers, their flies sewn up with cobbler's thread, and pads out, torched and bibled, grimly, joyfully, into the already sinning dusk.
But before all of that,
hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to a lovely new episode. Now, I've got to say, it's cold. I feel like winter's coming. There's some sort of economic meltdown going on. There's the threat of nuclear war. I'm feeling a bit blue. Jen, tell me about your week. Tell me you've had a better week than me.
I've had a good week. I've had family over from America, and so that's been good. And still adjusting to life with my daughter away at uni and trying to avoid breaking out the jumpers as long as possible so I can kind of acclimate. So when it actually gets really cold, I'm not shivering in my home that I can't afford to heat.
Well, this week's guest is taking me right back to my misspent youth because I went to university in Cardiff. And while in Cardiff, this particular lady was doing lots of magical things with music, and I will never hear her name mentioned without hearing my lovely friend Claire Guns singing one of her most famous songs at the top of her voice, terribly, might I add, sorry Claire, while we all got ready for a fancy dress party. So, ladies and gentlemen, may I welcome Kerris Matthews to the pod.
Oh, gosh, listen, thank you so much.
I'm going to have to make you sing A Line of Road Rage later for Claire because she'll never forgive me if I don't.
I don't know if you'd want that. It's been a while.
Trust me, you'll be better at it than she was. That's all you need to know.
I'm not sure about that.
Jen, over to you. Give us an intro about this lovely lady.
Yes, so Kerris Matthews. Kerris, of course, amazing musician, author, broadcaster. The more you dig into her work and everything she's done, the more amazing it is. She hosts an award-winning radio show on BBC Six, a blues show on BBC Radio Two, and co-hosts the new Radio Four show that explores connections between pop, rock, hip-hop, jazz, and more. She founded a music festival, was part of the multi-million selling group Catatonia, that is highly influenced Wendy, has been awarded an MBE for her services to the arts. She also sings my personal favorite Christmas song with Tom Jones, Baby It's Cold Outside.
I love that too.
And she has a wonderful new adaptation of Under Milkwood. This retelling is Dylan Thomas's beloved classic, written by one of the most important Welsh poets of the 20th century.
Dylan Thomas, if anyone knows anything about Welsh poetry, you know about Dylan. And it features an omnipresent narrator listening to the dreams and thoughts of the inhabitants of the fictional small village, which name I can't pronounce, but it's bugger all backwards. So tell me how to pronounce it, Kerris.
You pronounce it Llareggub.
Yeah, never would have got that. So Kerris, mum of three, tell me how old your brood are.
Well, actually, I'm a mum of five, if you count a blended family. So
we always count a blended family.
Yes, family's family, right? So my youngest is now 12. So no more scrapping on all fours, finding food everywhere, which is good. And then I have a 17-year-old, which is brilliant, actually. I love it. I have a 19-year-old, fiercely independent, who's just moved out and moved in with her boyfriend, which is interesting and brilliant as well. They've been together for 3 years, so she's amazing. But you just don't, you know, when you become a mum, you don't factor all these different kind of chapters. So I'm at that chapter now whereby they're getting ready to jump out of the nest or have jumped out of the nest. And it's really interesting and it's wonderful at the same time. So anyway, so 19-year-old and then my lovely blended family members, my children are who are already cooked kind of thing. they don't mind me saying that. 25 and 30. So pretty much adults. We're definitely adults and lovely too.
So how are you coping with the nest jumping?
I was really keen during COVID for nest jumping to happen, I must admit. It was so loud and so intense. And having live in central London, well, I did, it was a small space for what has become pretty much, apart from one child, all adults, adult-sized, adult needs.
Adult appetites, I'm sure.
Even their feet. I found
adult shoes.
Their shoes and feet are everywhere.
All of a sudden, it goes from being sort of children and adults to just like, boom, we are a house full of, we've got an audience. We've got a football team, adult size, you know, with all of that needs and chaos and everything. So it was hard. And then Glenn moved and she's happy. And I'm happy if she's happy. But it was really interesting because when it happened, I wasn't quite prepared for it. Because it's like, well, what happens now? When are you coming back? Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, that's what happens. So they become adults and then they go and that's it. And you're done. Well, it's really, really, I found it quite interesting and not something that I'd kind of prepared psychologically beforehand, if I'm being quite honest with you.
I find myself, I have to kind of just sit with the roller coaster of feelings with my daughter being gone, from being jubilant to being very down about it. What are your coping mechanisms?
What I find really interesting about this sort of privilege of hopefully, you know, relative chunk of time on the planet is that it does come in little chapters. I'm really looking forward to the idea of sort of looking to a chunk of time where most of my time isn't this frantic juggle between work, housekeeping and children. I'm really happy that that's kind of looking like it's ebbing away now. Like my boys help me shopping. They're all starting to be aware of the more we all help in the house, the less frantic it is. And, you know,
that's an amazing moment.
Honestly, I'm loving it.
I'm nowhere near that moment. I have to kind of bribe my children with pocket money to just put their plates by the dishwasher, but they're much littler. They're kind of seven. So,
yeah. All right.
So, Keris, going back to the poem, it's been called a bedtime story for people of all ages. How on earth did you get involved in doing an illustrated adaptation of a Dylan Thomas poem?
Well, just to be completely correct, and I hate this, but it's not a poem. It was erroneously labelled as a poem elsewhere, so it's not your fault. It's one of those things where the untruths get out and then you can't put them back in the box. It's a play for voices. And it was one of the last pieces of work that he was working on before he died at the age of 39 in 1953. However, he's been Dylan Thomas now, the poet and writer and broadcaster. He began this as a teenager when he was still in school. This is what I love about his work. He's absolutely fascinated by humans, the human condition, about us, warts and all. Some of my favourite TV programmes, Sopranos, Spiral or Engrenage, 10%, you know, the 10%, call my agent. They show us human beings that are not all what, nobody's all good or all bad. We're all really complex mix. Sometimes we're good, sometimes we're bad, sometimes we're a mix. This is what Dylan Thomas's work, he's all about this complex nature of man. He's all about the innocence of youth, that sense of wonder that we must keep reminding ourselves to keep in this really tough world, especially at the moment with, you know, everything that you were listing at the beginning of our chat. He just wants to remind us to keep that sense of wonder somehow alive, even as we go through the chapters of life. He's also very aware of our mortality. So even though he was writing some of his biggest poems when he was just a teenager, and then went on to write some of the, you know, Do Not Go Gentle, you know, is a very famous poem by him about, you know, mortality and going and dying, essentially. Even though he's a very, he brings this to the fore, he just wants to grab life by the horns. And so that's why I adore the theory behind, the philosophy behind his writing, but also then you come to his text, which is for the sound of text. And listen, bedtime stories is all about the sound of text and the rhymes. Goodnight Moon, Gruffalo, Wonky Donkey. These three are my favourites. They absolutely embrace rhyme and sounds and nonsense and beauty, all of these things you find in this play, which was a play, which is now a 17-minute bedtime story. I mean, it's such a long-winded answer, sorry. I love his work. B, when I was a mother to little children, and I loved those moments when you tuck them in and just before they go to sleep, those moments to me were the absolute pressure. You can feel your shoulders drop a bit, you know, you're putting them to bed. In a minute, you're going to have peace. But in those minutes before they fall asleep are some of the most precious, raw, influential, inspiring, sponge-like moments you can have with your offspring or with other people's children, or with children in general. You know, they are wide open to any story. You can go anywhere with them, and by going with them, you go yourself as well. Can I read you a bit from Under Milkwood?
We were just about to ask you that.
Yeah, we've had a look at it. It's amazing.
So this is a farmer. The farmer, what Dylan Thomas does is make the farmer, who is a human, who's meant to be intelligent, really angry, and it's the cows that have got the intelligence, and they're gentle and kiss him, even when he's bawling at them and hitting them and being absolutely horrendous. I don't include in that in the books. This is for babies, and I don't want to burst too many bubbles too early. But everyone who knows Under Milkwood will know that this farmer, Watkins, is a bit angry. And then it goes, Farmer Watkins in Salt Lake Farm bawls to a cow on the hill. She kisses him and moos gentle words as he raves and dances among his herd, walking delicately to the farm. And what's lovely is that Dylan Thomas names them Peg, Meg, Buttercup, Moll, Fan from the Castle, Theodosia, Daisy. What a lovely name for a girl, Theodosia, CO for short, isn't it? Anyway, this is what happens when dusk happens. It turns into a kind of a snow globe. So Dylan describes, these are pairings. So it's like scraps of buttons, bottle tops, fish bones, feathers, nail pairings, and dandruff and whale juice. So this is what happens when dusk happens. Now the town is dusk. Each cobble, donkey, goose, and Gooseberry Street is a thoroughfare of dusk and ceremonial dust, and night's first darkening of snow, and the sleep of birds drift under and through this place of love. Mrs. Ogmore Pritchard, there she is here, at the first drop of the dusk shower, seals all her doors and draws the blinds. Mr. Ogmore and Mr. Pritchard, that's ghosts, they're ghosts, reluctantly sigh and sidle into her clean house.
You first, Mr. Ogmore. After you, Mr. Pritchard.
Husbands, soon it will be time to go to bed. Tell me your tasks in order.
We must take our pyjamas from the drawer marked pyjamas.
And then you must take them off.
Basically, the story begins at night time. We go to their dreams. Then they wake up. Then it's morning, then it's afternoon, then it's dusk.
I think you just should keep going. I'm having far too nice a time. Please don't stop.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Listen to the text. Cobbler Jack Black grinds his night teeth, climbs into his religious trousers, their flies sewn up with cobbler's thread, and pads out, torched and bibled, grimly, joyfully, into the already sinning dusk. And he's off into the woods and we don't know what he's up to. And then there's the pub scenes. Because as people that are fans already will know, the thing with our Under Milkwood is that it's full of characters. So you've got the drunkard, the womanizer, you've got the hard worker, the clean freak. That was Mrs. Ogmore Pritchard. She's the clean freak. You've got the dreamers. You've got the beautiful, you've got the bigamy, the family with two wives. You know, it's all in there. People all over the world should be able to recognize. And that's one of my favorite scenes. So Organ Morgan, who's kind of loosely they're modeled on Bob Dylan, like eagle-eyed people will know that there's a lot of Dylan Thomas fans in the world. And I've kind of, I've nicked a few cast members. So Bob Dylan is Organ Morgan right there. And he just plays the organ. Organ Morgan all the time. Organ. Anyway, he imagines, he sees
Sebastian Bach in the graveyard. I'll listen, I'll do one more line and then I'll put it down. Organ Morgan, or Organ Morgan, goes to chapel to play the organ. He plays alone at night to anyone who will listen. Lovers, revelers, sheep. He sees Bach lying on a tombstone.
Johann Sebastian. Who?
That's Cherry Owen.
Johann Sebastian, mighty Bach, oh Bach, Bach.
To hell with you, says Cherry Owen. There he is. Who is resting on his way home. We say resting. He's had a few bit of whiskey there, see?
He's got the bottle in his hand.
Cherry Owen is the one who has a little bit of an issue with alcohol in the book. Yes, you find him in the pub. Then this pub scene, and then I will put it down, I promise. It's my favourite line. Hang on. So Sinbad, here, who's the barman, he's got a fox tail. So all of the detail in here comes from the text that we had to lose because it had to go down to a bedtime story. He says, and Cherry Owen, sober as Sunday, as he is every day of the week, goes off happy as Saturday to get drunk as a deacon, as he does every night. Evening, Cherry. Evening, Sinbad. What'll you have? Too much. I mean, it's not all alcohol. Let me just say to prospective parents, there's goodness in there. It's actually a story of love and hope, essentially. It's quite biblical in that it's got all the elements of good and bad in it, but you end up in a peaceful area full of love.
I have to say the illustrations, I mean, of course, the words, and hearing you say them there, so mellifluous and beautiful. The illustrations too, it has, because they're so detailed, you can see reading this story over and over and each time discovering something new, both in the text itself, but in the pictures as you kind of look more closely.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the illustrations. They were made by a Bristol-based artist called Kate Evans, whose own grandfather has a little history with Dylan Thomas, although she's not strictly speaking Welsh, her grandfather was. And we worked on this absolutely night and day. You can get lost in this, and I'm glad you picked up on all the detail because Kate was brilliant to work with. Nothing was ever too much, and we just tried. We didn't want to lose any of the magic of the text that we had to lose, so she just pulled it out of the bag. There's tiny little mice with gloves on, things that you can find, little bats. All the things that appear in the text are there somewhere, as much as we could do. And I've never enjoyed working as a team more than working with Kate on this, because she was just so patient and willing and just said, send me more details, send me more details, send me more detail. And the way she works, I wanted it to be like a timeless thing that all generations could enjoy and keep forever. So she works in old-fashioned ways, art-wise, and she often works on maps. So you can see the attention to detail and the sort of textures that she uses are quite old-fashioned. So I think they suited Under Milk Wood really well, and this idea of a timeless piece of magic.
Obviously, Wales, Welshness, the language is so important to you. Do your children speak Welsh?
You know, my heritage is Welsh. I'm as interested in your heritage or French heritage or Ghanaian heritage as I am. It just so happens that mine is Welsh, so I know more about it than I would Ghana. I think the more you know about your heritage, the more you can appreciate other people's heritages and the world's, you know, ever, you know, it gives up all of these wonderful riches of cultural riches wherever you go. And traveling's, you know, something I've always loved to do. I speak Spanish, I speak French. I try and speak English sometimes. But yes, in short, my children do speak Welsh, although they were brought up in the heart of London. So they have an English sounding speaking voice, and then they can speak Welsh with a lot of English words in it, which is what I do as well anyway. So, but I hope that I've brought them up feeling connected somehow, because again, it's that connection is part of understanding and your belonging on the planet. But I just wanted to say that I don't know if you listen to Six Music Show, I I've collected music from all over the world all my life. So it's not just, including Welsh music and stuff. But I was always quite hungry to find out about other cultures as well as my own.
Now, I want to talk to you about music, Keris. I've already said your music played an integral part in university life in Wales 20-something years ago. What do you listen to as a family? Kind of how is music a part of your life as a family at home, in the car?
This is quite complex because it changes as they get older and things shift. Didn't really, I mean, it's quite funny because I have a sister, I'm one of four, and my sister loves Disney. So she went full on with all the Disney musicals, and like, to me, that is torture. So, you know, the thing is, the beauty of music is that it really is up to you and whatever, but I'm highly opinionated about it, as you might imagine, because it's my passion and it's my work. Pretty much, if you listen to my show on A Six Music, you'll know what I'll be playing in the car. Like, I'm a terror in terms of, I'm intolerant to anything that gets highly repetitive, lacks groove, is not original, is played badly, or is just noisy. So off it goes. My children are used to that. So, but anyway, what we do now is they've got their smart phones and stuff. And what I love the most is, like, for example, my 17-year-old will start DJing in the car. So I'm like sitting there going like this, to Kanye West or to Tyler, the Creator, keeping hip with the kids, you know. It's a bonding moment, isn't it? It can be when you have what we used to call the iPod wars.
My daughter's got a playlist called her Banging House playlist. She is 11 and she's got a Banging House playlist.
Nice.
And you just have to, like, we have these little rows. No, I don't like this one. No, I do. And then someone in the back, like, turn it off. It's brilliant.
Well, that's the beauty of modern life as well. I mean, it's complex, but it's beautiful in the way that you can access all this music from all over the world. And that's the beauty of this emerging generation as well, that they do. So they're listening to the Korean K-pop or the Coffin Song, which I'm told is really super old now. So, you know, the memes that are going around with various music on it. So there's a dance at the moment, which is, what were they? It was a dance with a girl that was putting lipstick on when an earthquake was happening. I don't know if you've come across that one yet.
I've been spared that one. It's something pink that a K-pop band, someone pink that constantly played in my house. For all of the parents listening, K-pop is coming your way. If you've not got there yet, it's coming.
Yeah. Probably everyone will know the Gangnam Style.
Yeah.
You know, riding a horse, wasn't it? Something.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's varied. In short, it's varied and it's fun. Music is such a joy, isn't it?
So you talked about some of the themes of Under Milkwood, you know, this universal themes, the complexity of people, which I really love and so important to teach children about that. The importance of family and community is also kind of a theme running throughout. Do you talk to your children, or have you talked to your children, or did you when they were younger, about those values? Or is that just something that you kind of try to impart?
I think with most things, it's by default that they pick up on an awful lot of followed behavior, and what you value, they will start to value because you show value to them or respect to them. I've always thought that life would be nothing if you had no community to belong to. So it was always something that I try to do, is to keep my children in local schools, to stay in one place as much as we could.
But especially as a parent, because that community is what saves your skin. The amount of times my community have picked up my kids or taken my kids or whatever they do.
So that you don't feel alone.
Yeah.
And that is something that I guess the majority of us want, to not feel alone, whatever age we are, whether we're a child, a mother or a single widow. You know, we all want to feel like we belong, and that our presence on earth would be missed, maybe, you know, or that you can call on somebody. So, yeah, so I hold community and cultural stuff like books and art and films and music as the most important things. That's to my taste. That's philosophy. That's what's important, rather than, you know, worrying about
what car you're driving, or you know, what jewellery you can wear. I don't really find much value in that kind of thing.
I can't let you go without talking to you about a little bit more about Baby It's Cold Outside. I absolutely love your rendition. And of course, it's with your fellow Walesian, Tom Jones.
Fellow Welshie.
Yeah. I mean, was that as fun to record as it looks?
Well, first of all, I mean, the whole setup was just remarkable because they gave me a choice of songs and we went with that one because it's such a great song. Frank Lerce wrote it for his wife. It was their party piece at parties. It was never meant to be released to the public. She was apparently really angry with Frank, the writer of the song, for letting it out. So this whole thing that's happened about the poison in the drink and it's been the Me Too movement stuff is take it into the context of the age of it and also who wrote it for whom. There's a lot of love in it. And anyway, the poison thing, probably our fault, because in our video that we did with Tom Jones, that's what he does in the video, but that's taken it's not the song's fault, I don't think. If you think about it from the age, there were these two couples that obviously, I mean, these two people that obviously fancied each other, that just wanted any excuse to spend more time in a social construct that wasn't going to allow them the freedom to spend more time together. That's the whole background. It's a brilliant song to sing. So Tom said, let's do this song. I said, yes, please. We went to the studio in June. It was Tommy Danvers, who's a great friend of mine. He got the studio all Christmassy, lava lamps and fairy lights and Christmas trees, even in June. And it was a full orchestra as well, which is really highly unusual in modern recording terms. So we had the drummer there and all the strings and the brass. It was full. It was buzzing. We went into the vocal booth. Now, usually you have one vocal booth each. One singer there, and you usually do it separately. You can now you do it remotely. One can be in Texas and the other one can be in London nowadays. But Tommy deliberately wanted a vibe. So we were all in the studio. Not only did he want a vibe, he put me in the same booth as Tom. I'm like, how the hell is this going to work? Tom's voice is like a train coming. And my voice is a lot kind of, I mean, I can get there, but it's naturally quite small. How's that going to work? Do it. Okay, I trust you. Into the booth I go. You know, Yanta Thomas on drums. Amazing drummer. Beautiful sound. Old-fashioned, like a big band sound. It is an absolute romp from the minute it starts. The take that we kept was the first take we did. And it was the take where in the middle of it, you'll hear me go, oh, like that, because Tom had actually given me a huge elbow in my... in my waist, and I jumped, and you can hear that.
What was the elbow for? What had you done?
Him just playing around, you know. He's hilarious, and we're in this booth together, which is kind of unusual, you know, side by side.
But the song sounds like that romp. That's what's marvelous. It sounds like you're all having the best time.
Oh, we were. It's a great song. Tom's great. The musicians are great. It was a great time. Yeah, I love that. I'm so glad you like it.
How does it feel to be part, like I said earlier, you were part of my uni days. Jen said that's one of her favourite songs. What does that mean to you, to be part of the fabric of people's existence?
I think it's quite impossible to live your life thinking that that is the case, if you know what I mean. It's quite metaphysical. Is that the right way of looking at it? So you can't really compute it. I think you'd be a strange person indeed if you were going around going, one day back in 1999, somebody danced to that song or something. I don't know. I don't know. I'm so flattered and I feel so lovely being reminded for the moment about it, but I think with all musicians, don't want to talk for everybody, but you're only as good as your last gig. You're such a bunch of insecure people pleasers, many of us are anyway, not everybody. You have to move on. You have to move forward. You know what I mean? You can't just sit on your past stuff at all.
So you may not walk around every day, Karis, thinking, I'm amazing, but we do. So that's okay.
No, well, that's so nice of you to send it over. No, I think that would be impossible. I think you'd be a bit of a sociopath if you did go through life a bit like that, wouldn't you?
I think you'd be a bit odd. Maybe not, you know.
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, Mariah or, you know, big legends can do that. Like, you know, proper legends. But I like a normal life on the whole. And I don't think thinking about yourself too much is very healthy for a normal life.
What do the kids think of it? Do they kind of play old Catatonia songs at you, and or do they just not care?
Yeah, a mixture of everything. There's a moment when they turn about 6 or 7 when they start going, "That's Charis Matthews," and you're like, what are you doing? Because I think that's the first time that they go to school and somebody says something, and then they pick up on it, and then that's over quickly. And that's happened to the three little ones. But now, then they reach teenagers and they couldn't think of anything more excruciatingly embarrassing as you know, a mother that used to do music, you know. It's all hat to them, isn't it? It's like, oh.
Yeah, whatever, mum.
Which is fine. I've got the best taste in music. It's fine. As long as they concede to that, it's fine.
And on that note, Charis, thank you so much for being so wonderful and for reading us a bedtime story. I could have filled a whole pod with you just reading, in truth.
And I have to remind everyone, Charis Matthews' Under Milkwood, an illustrated retelling by Dylan Thomas and Charis Matthews, illustrated by Kate Evans, is published by WNN on the 3rd of November, 2022. It's available in hardback, ebook, and audio for £20, and it is beautiful. So do check it out.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Honestly, I've had such a lovely time. Thank you.